This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com. All right, this is a very special episode, partly because of my guest and the content, and partly because this is the first Friday edition of Plant Yourself Podcast. And the reason I'm doing a Friday edition, I'm moving to a two-a-week schedule to see how it goes, is kind of stupid, actually. I've got like 9 interviews in the can, which means that when I do another interview and the person says, well, when is it going to air? I'm like, well, like 2.5 months from now. And it's embarrassing to say that because these are, you know, important, valuable people doing amazing work. And I don't want to like make it seem like I can put this stuff off indefinitely. They've just given me an hour of their time. And I'm like, yeah, sometime in the future, maybe 2016, maybe 2017. So I figure if I double the number of podcasts I do, I can then say, well, you know, it'll be this month or early next month, and that will feel better. Anyway, today's episode features Josh Lajani. Josh is a dear friend of mine. He's my running mentor and coach. I've got my first big race coming up in a week and a day on October 1st. And Josh has helped me and guided me and trained me and encouraged me and warned me and all that sort of thing. He's also a business partner, and we're running the Big Change Program together, which I believe is changing people's lives. It's certainly changed Josh's and mine in terms of the way we interact and help people and guide people and inspire and contribute to the movement and to, you know, happiness, joy, and peace on earth. And we're also working on a lot of other things together. Some of them are going slower than others. But I was on Facebook the other day, and I noticed that Josh posted about a Twitter argument that was going on with him and Dr. Garth Davis, my co-author for Proteinaholic, on the one side, and the very, very famous podcaster Joe Rogan on the other. And Joe's a big deal. He's got millions of followers and tens of thousands of tweets and a huge podcast audience, and he's a personality. And so there he was mixing it up with Dr. Garth about this new study that had just come out, saying that the sugar industry had been manipulating studies, funding anti-saturated fat studies. And so basically we couldn't trust anything we'd ever heard, and therefore rest in peace China study. And Garth jumped in, and the two of them were going back and forth a little bit. So Joe tweeted, there are certainly benefits to eating lots of plants. The question is, are there also benefits to eating animals? And here's how Josh responded. At Joe Rogan, at Dr. Garth Davis, absolutely. It's called avoiding starvation. In excess of that, it's ignoring nature's brilliant protocol. And that phrase, nature's brilliant protocol, really caught my eye. It caught Joe Rogan's eye because he wrote back and says, what do you mean by that? And so that's what I wanted to talk with Josh on this podcast about, this concept that simply by looking at nature with curiosity and humility, we can intuit, we can look inside ourselves, use common sense to figure out how we should eat and move and live for optimal health and happiness. Quick warning, Josh likes to use salty language, so if you're listening to this around the innocent, you may want to pop in your earbuds. But aside from that, just hang on and enjoy the ride. So without further ado, Josh Lajani, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, we talk so much and we've done so much together. This is our first official Plant Yourself extravaganza. And it came about because of, you sent me a couple of text messages showing that you and Dr. Garth Davis were in a tweet conversation with Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah. Dr. Garth Davis was, and I just kind of chimed in.
Yeah, and you know, you and Joe responded to you. He had like a curiosity. You were baiting him a little bit, right? Like he's not interested in the truth, and he came back. So the topic was, and this is something you and I have talked about a lot, that like, you have a felt sense, a logical sense of like what we should eat. And, you know, you've done a lot of reading and you're very well versed in it. You have a certificate from the E. Cornell, from the nutrition studies, you know, T. Colin Campbell, Nutrition Studies Institute. And at the same time, in talking to you, you're like, you're not interested in relying on a lot of scientific studies. You sort of have a very grounded, logical kind of, you know, back to nature approach. And that's what I wanted to talk about, because, you know, you and I have discussed and shared with a lot of people who are constantly like doubting, like, oh, here's a new study. Doesn't this say that maybe we were wrong? Maybe more animal fat is good for us. Maybe we shouldn't be eating so many carbohydrates. And you're not interested in getting into the weeds of scientific inquiry. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So no, not so specifically as everybody does and like want to be technically, well, you know, this nutrient and this type of amino acid is only bioavailable through fish instead of other sources, or like all these different micro levels of molecules and like technically accurate statements, probably, I don't know, of different scientific chemical things that are technically true. But just like what Dr. Campbell talked about, is it's so reductionist and so like so minuscule of a level that we're trying to talk about these things, like so specifically, like analyzing each individual musical note of a, you know, of some sort of classical piece or something, you know, instead of just enjoying the music of the, you know, nature's what seems logical that nature has set forth as like a pretty brilliant self-sustaining protocol with all the other organisms on the planet. Just these human animals seem to kind of fuck stuff up for some reason, you know? And so, you know, in noticing that and listening to that music in my life, I've like stepped back and say, you know what, you know, of course we started building fire and cooking shit and making things with rocks and using hammers and like started making tools and leveraging our surroundings to make, to get more and more production in different areas of our lives, whether it's food or shelter or war or whatever. Right. But the time in which we've been doing that, so however many tens of thousands of years, just say, you know, whatever, I don't know, I'm no anthropologist, whatever, I'm going to just throw a number, 20,000 years ago or whatever, seems like a very long time to us, but it's just a popcorn fart in the wind compared to what the organism's been doing over the last few million years. And I think what the organism has been doing over the last few million years is way more important than the popcorn fart in the wind of when we've been, you know, figured out how to take rocks and stick them through animals to eat them every now and then. So the every now and then animal eating part, I think, might be something viable in the evolutionary or in the in the overall behavior of the organism. But I think we get into the weeds when we start, like we get into like there's like a quantity problem with the naturalness of or naturally attainable quantities of like of other animals' muscles and organs and tissues. I think we're kind of missing the boat on how often that was probably happening before the stones killing animals part, you know. I'm not arguing that we didn't figure out how to do these and find these nutritionally dense sources of food to keep from dying and to or as a semi-annual sort of a, whether it's ritualistic or it's out of necessity because all the plants are frozen and dead or whatever, where we've developed this kind of rhythm. I'm not arguing that, but I'm thinking that we've extrapolated the stone out so far from just the pointy stone all the way out to this mechanism that creates things like CAFOs and deer feeders with you know, solar panels and automatic timers and box blinds with heaters so you can sit down and stay nice and cozy and watch porn and kill a freaking deer every now and then when a big enough one comes out, like seriously, and drink beer and like hang out, you know. It's like a little cubicle apartment that you sit in to go kill deer. I think we've gotten way far away from what the organisms meant as like a natural attainable quantity of meat with our honing of the tool over this little popcorn fart in the wind portion of time.
All right, so let's start with, you know, before we go to the margins, great, because the real arguments in our culture are kind of at the margins, like, you know, and that uh-huh. seems to become like these little details become all we obsess about. And so I think what I enjoy from talking to you is you get back to these really, really basic, obvious truths. And
because I'm simple, though, Howie, that's why, because that's out of necessity, because I don't have the capacity to jog on that level with some of the people who are so well versed in the micro details. So it's easier and more liberating for me to zoom away and take a more 30,000 foot logic based approach to how I do my day to day living. You know what I mean?
It's very useful, you know. So I think of you sometimes as like, you know, the boy in the emperor's new clothes. Like you know, it's not, you know, you're very intelligent, you're very well read, but you haven't lost that kind of, you know, practical coon-ass sense of, well, does this just make sense?
Just teaches you that. Yeah, sometimes you got to use duct tape to make crazy shit, and it doesn't tell you how to. That's not in the directions on the pack of duct tape. You just figure shit out, and because what makes most logical sense, and that's how I roll. That's all.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What from what you have experienced and seen, and we can get into your backstory a little bit. You know, you're a star of two Rich Roll podcasts. So we didn't get into immediately your backstory because it's out there for people to see and hear.
Yes,
but
sir.
we'll touch on, you know, the hunting and all that and you know your early years not living according to nature's protocol. But like from where you are right now, what do authentic human beings do, you know, based on who we are and how we evolved and what's good for us?
The way I imagine it, because I came up in the country, right? And I came up in the woods and I came up hunting and fishing. So I think there's a certain drive to really sort of understand what your environment can provide to you to make a living, i.e. eat, i.e. stay alive with, right? And so I grew up learning that we get on this four-wheeler and we go ride and we go notice where we see deer sign, and you know that there's a, you know, there's a game trail right here. So we pay attention to these things in our environment and we figure out how to eat them to make a living, kind of, right? And so I think there's an innate drive as a human being, like as the animals we are, to take an accounting of our physical environment, sort of cover the ground that we stand on, right? I think that requires some bipedal locomotion instead of four-wheelers and trucks and stuff like that. More natural line of doing it is going to be through covering territory with your feet. And I think that if we'd be willing to entertain removing the tools portion of how we originally got food, that we would see how, you know, a lot of leafy greens and tubers and stuff would be those things that as we travel and cover and make an assessment of our new territory, wherever we happen to be, that we're going to cover ground and then we're going to find these foods that not really a whole other or whole bunch of other organisms are participating in eating. You know, we're going to be eating these green leafies and tubers and stalky vegetables and like really good, you know, stuff, as a default most of the time. And of course, you know, other things on the margins might exist inside of that, but for as a default, you know, main existence, that's what we're doing, is we're covering new territory, assessing our ground, where we are, and then eating the things that are most efficiently acquired with the least amount of risk. I think it's a huge energy risk to eat another animal with just your hands as tools. I think that's what drives my logic to think that a lot more efficient allocation of energy would be in the eating of plants and moving in a way that helps you discover new sources of those things. And in the same time, you're understanding the topography of your land. You're starting to understand your little patch of earth, and maybe that earth consists of some shellfish on a shoreline or something. Maybe it doesn't consist of that at all. Maybe you don't have many tubers. Maybe it's a lot of fruits. Maybe it's a lot of coconuts instead. So humans are able to do all of these cool things that have a lot to do with being able to cover your ground that you live on, your immediate ground that you live on. And I think finding food that's the path of least resistance type foods is going to be very minimal animal and mostly plant, a lot of plant. And I think if you can recognize it as something that's logic, which I think that's logical to me, then every time I make a food choice, I kind of try to pass it through that litmus test of its natural attainability. Does that make sense, or did I just ramble a whole lot?
No, it makes a lot of sense. So if you put yourself in the position of that early human who didn't have the porn and beer sodden deer blind with a solar powered feeder, that you're thinking like, what if I were smart and I was just walking, living in this environment, what would my best strategy be for meeting the nutrient needs of myself and my family? And it would be like, let's eat things that don't run away from us.
Exactly.
Let's eat things that don't try to bite us back.
Right.
And let's eat
and
things
where And it doesn't really have anything to do with feeling sorry for those animals or for those things, or being like, it doesn't have really a whole lot to do with that. To me, it has more to do with the logic of it. That's all.
Yeah. And, and try to eat the foods that we can eat that are in abundance, because there's not a lot of competition for them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's in a nutshell how we even get off track inside the plant-based eating community. We still don't really go there with our food choices a lot of times. So we eat a bunch of nut butters and processed stuff and breads and pastas and all of these flour induced food creations, right? I think that's how people go, oh, well, he's plant-based and he hadn't blah, blah, blah. And that's true, because you're still not really fully backing all the way out and taking a true assessment of what the human being was probably most logically doing in the time of, in nut cutting time, when it's time to eat food. What are we doing? Guns against your temple. Get me a bite of food. What are we going to do with nothing in our hands, standing in the woods? What are we doing first? What's the first thing we're going to eat? Is it an animal? Probably not. Most of the time, it's going to be a nut that we found, or some leaves that are growing, or some tubers, or, in the ground. And that's how you're going to survive and stay alive. And ironically, to adopt that way of eating has really meant survival for me in my life, and not just for me, but for a lot of people I know. And it's something I'm real passionate about. It's not about being part of a team to me. It's about one team. It's like human race, an authentic human race, if we can do our best to try and get there. And I think we get off in the weeds on discussing these micro details and technicality sometimes, and we get away from the whole.
Right. So as you were speaking, I suddenly had a deliciously wicked desire to just piss off everybody.
What's that?
just to have this conversation to kind of take on a lot of the holy cows.
Yeah.
Right. So could we talk about your relationship with hunting and fishing?
Yeah, sure.
Because you grew up doing it, and I know it's not usual, but it's not unheard of for someone to kind of change and say, well, I've grown up, I have a different way of looking at the world, I'm now plant based or vegan or vegetarian or New Age or hippie, and most of those people reject the culture that they came from. And you decidedly do not.
No, not at all. No, this is my home. This is my territory. This is where I grew up. I sound like the people from here. This is an important piece of earth to me, this boot-shaped piece of earth. You know, I love this state. I love my region. I love sounding the way I do. I love being a coon ass. And so I empathize with a lot of the things that I empathize with people who are still in that place where they can't have their identity without not doing some things that fly in the face of avoiding the mistakes of our fathers and grandfathers, most recently, those last couple generations, especially in the realm of heart disease and cancer and diabetes and obesity and those things. Like we've all watched them do these things, live this way. We all have done this. This isn't like a historical, like this isn't, you know, been going on for generation after generation after generation of the fat, sick, coon ass. But it has really gotten worse since I've grown up. And I know that we go to a lot of funerals here, and my point is it just so happens we're also very food centric culture, and not just food centric, but you know, roux and stew and hunting, you know, meat, like hunting, I'm hunting animals and getting the meat as food for that. But we don't just do that. We mix it with bacon. We mix it with pork. We make sausage out of it. We make tamales out of it. We make cheese burritos out of deer meat. Like, so there's all of these crazy things that we do, and in trying to adhere to what we think makes us like the thing we want to be the most, a real, like a part of a culture that you love, of a state that you love. And it's like this weird dichotomy. I don't want to throw my hands up and say, well, they'll never change or anything like that. Nor do I want to be the guy constantly telling, hey, doing that is wrong. Don't do that. Stop doing that. You know, I don't want to be that guy either. All I want to do is say there's a better way. We can still be coon ass. We can still curse a lot, have you a beer every now and then, do a lot of the things we like to do. Hell, kill a deer once a year. But let's just change a lot of things around that. And I think that there's a window of opportunity to be able to affect some real change in a place that nobody in a million years would have ever thought possible. And that's why I kind of do things the way I do, as far as still identifying with my culture and loving my people. And I have a whole bunch of friends that are hunters, so I can't hate on hunters. I love hunters. Most of the people I know are hunters. And I grew up hunting and fishing, so I know what it feels like to have my arms wet with blood all the way up to my elbows. And I know what it's like to skin a deer and remove organs and quarter it up and put it in the ice chest and grind the meat and make sausage. And, you know, I know how to do all of those things. I know what it's like. I know that connection. And it's not something that's akin to a mobster murdering people and dismembering them. It's not that at all. It's people doing what they think is akin to picking an apple from a tree. They're eating food from the environment. And my only argument with that is that I think we're able to attain those foods at an unnatural rate, an unnatural quantity. And so if I can just be a voice in helping people just understand some very simple, crude, basic things, instead of how many, you know, amino acids make up a specific type of protein, I would much rather people try to see coon ass logic in my diet approach than to understand my scientific correctness. Does that make sense? right? That's important to me that people in Chagbay know what the hell I'm talking about when I'm talking about why I only eat plants and move the way I do.
Right. Now, so, I mean, I think, you know, ethical vegans would follow you almost to the end of your paragraph. But they,
I know that.
They get,
I've been beat up a lot.
They get stuck. You know, what's like, you're saying, you said, like, it's okay to kill a deer once a year. So you, and you're, you know, you're, I know you, you're a very compassionate, humane, ethical person. You feel deeply for animals and you have, there's, you're applying a kind of a different logic than the algorithm of veganism, which is, it is never right to take another life.
Right. And I get that. My point is, to the person who is going to kill a deer once a year, that person still thinks that food is, that animal meat is still a very necessary part of their diet. And if you're hung up on that point and you can't let it go and you can't stop going to your camp and you can't do all of those things, then fine, go, keep going. But let's be real about the quantities. Let's not fill up two chest freezers and an upright with deer roast and deer sausage and deer burritos and then and pretend like we're surviving off of the land. That's not really what we're doing. We kind of go and we kind of gorging a little bit, right? So that's my point is, kill a deer if you're doing it because you think you need to eat it. Because we kill plants. I'm not making the broccoli versus a rabbit argument that I heard some other people make online. That's kind of silly. Like, even if broccoli does have feelings, it's our food source. Just like lions, I mean, gazelles have feelings, but, you know, a lion's still going to eat the shit out of it, even if it's whining and crying. And so it doesn't matter, because I've heard that argument that, oh, well, there's science that proves that plants communicate with the microbiology in the soil, and they have communication, and there's all kind of things going on in there. And, you know, who's to say that's not, you're taking a life right there. It's like, absolutely, you're correct. I think we are. But I think that is the lives we are designed to consume in our lives, and we're designed to be consumed by other things, right? And so it doesn't really matter if the plant is going to shed a tear if I cut it, because it's my food. But I need to respect it and own up to it. And I think that it's possible, if you still believe that a deer is your food, to own that, to kill that deer in a respectful way and almost be ritualistic in its harvest. And if you've ever been to a deer camp, you know it's not a bunch of drunk, crazed people murdering innocent animals. It's a very solemn thing when they smear blood on the face of a kid who's killed his first deer. It's a respect. It's not a murderous rampage. I can't beat people up for that. And another thing is, I have a carnivore that lives in my house. I have a 160-pound carnivore called a Great Dane that lives in my house. And who am I to say that this dog is living, that the kibble I buy for him at the store is the best thing for his health? Wouldn't it be better to feed him some game, some wild game, than to, you know, feed him broccoli stalks? I mean, and so I wouldn't put it out the realm of possibilities that Josh might squeeze the trigger on one day to feed his dog or to feed, you know, his carnivore that depends on him for sustenance. That's, or maybe catch a tuna and do the same thing and give the meat away or something. I'm never going to count myself out of that. But my point is, I'll never participate in the gross quantities, although I wasn't as good of a shot as a lot of my friends. So it wasn't, I wasn't killing as many doves as a lot of people were. But I'm not going to be collecting those animals in these gross quantities at all, ever in my life, ever again. So the act of the hunting part has moved away from me, but I get the drive for the hunting. And I think that same drive for the hunting is what drives me for the running in my life, because I think running is hunting. That's the original hunting, is running. And I don't mean stuff, I don't mean where you run a gazelle until he passes out from heat exhaustion. I mean covering territory to find food for your clan that's back at the cave or where the fuck ever, and you have to find enough food spread out among these all these square miles to keep your people alive. And that's hunting. And I think that that's why I'm so naturally driven to this hunting thing. I mean, to this running thing, is because of my identification as a person who grew up in nature and considered himself a hunter, a gatherer of nutrients, a gatherer of needs, and acquirer for his family, for his clan, you know. And I'm doing the same thing in a completely different world, but it's the same drive behind it and the same passion behind it. And I know that some other coon asses are doing it with me. And so it's pretty cool to see it happen, even on a tiny, tiny level. But
right. So yeah, you, to the same extent that you think that like the human birthright is eating mostly these plants, especially the greens and the tubers that are, you know, available to us pretty much year round with, mm-hmm. you know, and then whatever on the margins we need to survive. You also think right. that like our birthright is bipedal animals, you know, walking, jogging, running. And that's
and
if we're not right. if we're not doing that, we are not fully embracing our human potential and heritage.
We're not fully embracing that natural logical protocol to me, that balance of do this to find these kind of foods, eat these kind of foods, do this to find these kind of foods, eat these kind of foods, that constant you know, that constant backbeat, like you talked about in your blog post yesterday, that constant backbeat of an invitation to do better. That's what this thing is, that's an aspiration to me, is to constantly be thinking about trying to eat that way and move that way, and eat that way and move that way. Move as if I had to go and move in a way that's in balance with the things that I'm eating. And a lot of people don't do that either, you know, even inside the plant-based world, right?
Right. Well, you use the example of like a squirrel. Like the squirrel, like no other creature except for humans and our pets has to think about it, right? Like
no.
Right? So explain that, like this idea of balancing movement with caloric intake.
Yeah, I think it's something that would naturally just happen in the default. If you were an animal, if you were a rabbit shitting in the woods, you're going to eat what rabbits eat. You're going to move the way rabbits eat. I mean, move the way rabbits move. And you're going to live I guess they live fulfilling lives. We're not, you know, it's up to them to do whatever they want to do. But they live rabbit lives, whatever the fuck a rabbit life is like. I don't know. But they do it, and they're able to live an entire life cycle and procreate and do the thing that rabbits do without really getting any bottles of supplements from Amazon or going to Walgreens or any doctor checkups, you know. And that goes across the board for all animals. They just kind of happen. And so I bet if we tied a bald eagle, or let me put it better, I bet if we tied up a deer and fed a deer sausage biscuits from McDonald's every day, I bet the deer would eat the shit out of them. He would love them. He would eat them every day. But we didn't let that deer have its deer food, and that deer is going to be sick as shit. And we're going to wonder, or because I've seen a deer eat a raw bird before on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So let's just say, okay, let's remove the processed food component. Let's just say we saw a deer eat a bird. So now we'll feed the deer a bird once a day for the rest of its life. And I bet you, just a guess, this is just me using my Chack Bay logic again, I bet you that deer will be sick if you overfed it birds, if you overfed it dead birds, because that's not what it's doing. It did something in that micro sliver of time that it felt like it needed for some sort of nutrient uptake, or who knows, maybe the deer is just fucking crazy. I don't know. But the thing is, it I've seen a deer do that, but that does not mean that that's what their natural drive is to do. And so that's kind of what I kind of got off the weeds in an example there, but that's kind of the way I see it. I mean, you can, you know, it just makes good logical sense when we look at the way other primates act, the way other animals with similar physical attributes and teeth and eyeballs and guts and fingernails and all that stuff. I think you can draw good logical conclusions as to what this animal is meant to sustain itself on. And I think in epidemiologically that it's pretty clear too. When you start getting down the path of talking about what Dr. McDougall talks about and all. But anyway, yeah. So I think that we're meant to just like the rabbits and the squirrels, there's a default rhythm that's set to happen without any of our participation of it, and getting up and moving every day and making our living, you know? And I think we distort our food intake in ways that other animals don't. And I think it's a stretch to say, well, other animals don't drive cars. That's true. But see then where we go now, we're going into ridiculosity of specific details to try to make points that are really, you know, I don't really know what they say.
Right. Well, let's follow that to absurdity for a little bit, so that people will argue when you say, look, humans are, you know, we're the only animals who blank, like, you know, every social scientist worth his salt has to come, or her salt has to come up with a completion to that sentence. But in the plant-based community, we'd say, you know, we never wean. We're drinking the milk of another species, or we're living, you know, there's so many ways in which humans are living unnatural lives. And cars, you know, vehicles, especially like when you told me when you went hunting that there was a lot of fossil fuel involved.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So that's another way that the natural act of covering territory to gather calories for your clan gets distorted, not in absolute terms, but just in terms of ratios and quantities and effort, right?
That's right. That's right. Right.
So why does that matter? Why does it matter that, you know, where you weren't like walking 12 miles to hunt, but you were taking a Ford Explorer or whatever out, you know, to the camp?
Because I think you lose the connection with how precious of a resource that is to have, if you have it at all. You lose connection with how difficult that is to get as a food source, this muscle of this animal or this organ of this animal. And I think if you had to cover, I have a friend that does that. He doesn't eat meat from the grocery store at all. He goes and he walks in his bare feet like a real coon ass and goes through the woods. And I envision him in mud banks like Rambo, mashed up against the mud with a fucking Bowie knife waiting for an animal to pass. And he just jumps out and cuts its throat. He's not sitting in a box blind somewhere with a high powered rifle shooting. He's like in the woods, shirtless, killing stuff with his bare hands. That's a whole different connection. And he is someone who loves animals. I've seen pictures of him actually catching piglets in the woods and petting them and stuff. Right. But he's got this, so it's not like he's a monster. But what it is he feels like that is food, and his evidence is his own existence, his body, his physical makeup, his athletic capacity and ability. And I can't really argue with that. I can't really argue with his existence on a results basis. All I can do is offer that even the hunting that he participates in is probably a little high on the attainable quantity scale what nature would have us doing, right?
Hmm.
But
Is it because is it because he has less competition because none of the rest of us are doing that?
No, I think it's more of like just a systems of the body balance. Like he's working, like he just went out of state and logged several, like a few hundred miles over the weekend, just exploring territory and doing scouting and getting ready for the season, the upcoming season. Most people that go and do their fall hunting aren't spending that type of energy with their own body to do it. And so, so I think that's what I'm getting at, is there's a balance in how much he's burning and how much he's using and the what little bit he does, because he's not crazy, like, you know, only eat meat. He does eat lots of fiber and whole plant foods as well. And so I think that existence is honestly, without hurting a lot of people's feelings, healthier than a lot of the vegan existences that I've seen. Does that make sense to you? That's gonna piss off some people probably, but I think that's the truth. I really do. I think because his meat quantity might be a little bit high, or a lot of bit high, based on the things that I've read and heard when it comes to like TMAO production and actual consuming, even just little bits of animal proteins. I think that there's still just a problem with the quantity, even at his level. But I feel like I'm stumbling over myself. But the thing is I'm trying to answer the question about the balance. I think that there's a balance in his life because he's more connected. He respects the animal. It's weird. It's going to sound silly to say it, but he knows more about the animals that he kills and he harvests and puts in his body than a lot of people who want to save those animals know about them. And he really appreciates them and he's not murdering anything. He's really trying to be one with nature. And I think that he might just be off just a tad, but who am I to judge him? I'm not going to not be friends with him or call him out or try to sway him to stop his devilish ways. But at the same time, I do think we should not be eating so much meat.
Right. Let's handle the factory farms first. Then let's handle the so-called humane farms that really aren't. Then when all that's solved, then we'll take a hard look at your friend. And, let's worry about that to the extent that he's contributing to the problem.
That's exactly what I mean, Howard. That's exactly what I mean. He's not participating in the CAFOs and in the insane poultry industry. He's not participating in the dairy industry at all. That's exactly right. If we're going to do it at all, let's do it like that. And boy, you talk about, we'll solve a hell of a lot of problems if we did that, if we took that tack and made going to the deer camp more of an athletic adventure than a gluttonous vacation.
Right. So you talked a couple times about like this ultra rich plant-based or vegan eating, where we're having, the nut butters, and there's also, it's not just the quantities, it's the whole culture, right? Of vegan hedonism. Now I've been part of and privy to arguments where, especially ethical vegans will get angry at people like Drs. Campbell and Esselstyn and McDougall for being so strict about health because, say, they're making it too hard for ordinary people to turn vegan. And I've heard, from the health perspective that, the dismissing junk food vegans. So what's, when again, not getting into the weeds, but just with your simple coon-ass look at the world, what do you see when you see kind of, this food positive vegan culture?
I think again that we have gotten so used to having things in quantities that aren't naturally sort of available to us, and things including, like, you know, calories, period, like just so caloric density, for instance, and some of the ways. So what we do is we get animal centric and we get taste centric, and we get so locked up into how delicious it is to do something as wonderful as go vegan. So the focus gets shifted again from the focus kind of gets shifted in away from the animal that matters most, which is the animal whose skin you inhabit. And so what we do is we put that animal's health and well-being, we turn a blind eye to what we do to that animal's health and well-being in the name of all other sentient beings on planet Earth. And I think that if there, that's what making it easy to be vegan does, right? And I think what Dr. Esselstyn and Dr. McDougall and those people, the thing that they provide is a real fact-based protocol, providing that real fact-based protocol that's going to be really aspirational to most, including myself. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I haven't had anything with oil in it since I read, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. But what I am saying is that I am extremely cognizant of all of those things that damage the endothelial because of this knowledge. And I know that the endothelium is the culprit for the heart disease that ravages my people and my family. So knowing and seeing seeing those results in like the Esselstyn study and seeing those types of things are great pieces of evidence in my mind to help me avoid a similar fate of several, you know, a couple of generations, but across several different family connections, right? Familial connections. We have tons of people who have died of heart disease and people that are very, very close to me and took me a long time to get over. And when I really became aware of what Esselstyn and Campbell and McDougall and Garth Davis, what they are all talking about, when I became aware of that and its undeniable connection with cardiovascular disease, it became a no-brainer to me to adopt this as a protocol, and it not 100%, but aspirationally at least, right? And look, when I say not 100%, what's left over is really immaterial. It's very, very, very small. I wouldn't call it moderation even. I would call it immaterial. The things that go outside of that in my life as far as food goes. But that's because those things make sense to me. Like mushed up potatoes with kale is something that I feel like is a very is natural human feed. You know what I mean? It's natural human feed. So it makes sense that those things would be very healthy for me. It makes sense to me that doctors Esselstyn and McDougall Ornish's results showed what they showed, because the food that they're talking about makes sense to me to be what nature's natural default is for this particular organism. And the fact that if that makes sense, that that's the natural default food source for the organism, and people who participate in that have these results physically and medically, then I don't really need to know a whole lot more. I don't really need to know how much beta carotene I need in every single fucking bite of food. I don't need to know all of these details. It's so much to be able to have a pissing war on Twitter or whatever. It just makes good sense to me. And what I was getting to was what the service that those doctors provide is just they're presenters of these facts in a very black and white way. And you do what you want with those. But what I've discovered over my couple of years in trying to get fitter and healthier is that in the balance, it almost always comes back to eat more fruits and vegetables in your diet. And even Joe Rogan said that in his response to me. What he said was, basically fruits and vegetables, nobody will argue that more fruits and vegetables are always good in a diet. But the question is meat healthy too, or something to that, or does meat have a purpose too? And I think it does, but just on such a tiny, tiny level that it's almost immaterial to the overall natural human diet. And the fact that Dr. Esselstyn and them preach this, or I hate the word preach, but you know what I mean, just sort of espouse this information, and are doctors, so very interested in compliance by nature. I think they serve a, I don't care if it makes it harder to go vegan. I think if the people start understanding the health of it first, in a place like where I'm from, where heart disease is so huge of a killer, then they can do a thing like eat a vegan diet that they would have never gotten to. They would have never gotten to that place with you, throwing red paint on their stuffed deer mount on the wall, or screaming at him with a megaphone as he loads his deer in his truck that he's a murderer. I think that there's more value in what the plant-based doctors are providing to the human race than what the super enhanced vegan processed food industry is providing to people going plant-based. Maybe you might disagree with that. Maybe having these great cookies and pies and all is getting people to eat less animals. But I think when you eat that way and get off the animals and say, well, you should go plant-based. Well, and they look at you and go, well, why?
Why? Yeah, well, I look at that the same way I look at pharmaceutical drugs. Like, I don't hate all pharmaceutical drugs. I think most of them are misused, and yeah. I think all of them have their place. So I think there is definitely a place for, like, vegan junk food, for the fake meats. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting, like, work on cognitive dissonance. I talked about this in a podcast I did with Marta Zaraska, who wrote Meat Hooked, about the idea that once people go vegetarian or vegan, then all of a sudden a lot of their cognitive dissonance around eating animals go like it's a way in. So I think those foods have their usefulness. What I'm interested in is, like, what you hooked me on when we started talking, and then we met, and then I got all inspired to start running and, you know, becoming a beast, or discovering my inner beast, as I think of it, that all of a sudden I was chasing something much bigger and much more pleasurable than pleasure. And I think that's kind of where I take issue with the vegan community that's all about this food porn and look at this another cashew-based cheese sauce that I'm going to throw all over everything. That the assumption is there that human beings are basically pleasure-seeking animals and we can never transcend that. So if you want people to go vegan, if you want to save the planet, if you want to save the animals, we have to appeal to hedonism. And what you told me, not through words, but through living it, is that there's something so much bigger that when you become an authentic human being, there's something so much grander than just stuffing my face with food that makes me happy for 3 minutes. And I think like it's not vegan versus non-vegan. I think the real question is, are we trying to become authentic human beings or are we trying to stay trapped?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's hard to put into words, which is why I talk so goddamn much, I guess, because I can't really ever seem to hit the nail on the head, you know, but it is exactly that. It's hard to explain how much my every waking moment, and it sounds like hyperbole and it sounds like bullshit, but it's hard to explain how my every waking moment, I feel so amazing about life and my relationships with other humans and my place in the universe and on this earth and my relationship with the plants and nutrients that make up my body and my relationship with my topography of the land that I live around because I cover it in mileage with my own 2 feet. Like all of these things just make me so happy. The immediate ejaculation I used to get from a good hot bowl of a crawfish stew with a big plop of potato salad right in the top, or turtle sauce pecan with a big plop of potato salad right in the top with some fried oysters on the side or something like that. You know, it's like that morsel of food ejaculation cannot touch the daily happiness that I and love. Like it's this weird, it sounds so bullshitty and emasculating, but it's just the truth, man. I feel like I know you, like I'm happy. You're becoming a very good friend of mine, like Rich Roll, like Garth Davis, you know, I mean, Tim, you name it, people that you don't even know that I talked to at Coburn's today and while I was buying parts for a shit pump, right? Like all of these connections are richer and my existence is richer. I feel happier and there's no micromanaging of my nutrient intake through, you know, better make sure I got X of this and X of that, and I have 5 bottles of pills that are supposed to help me turn all of the specific knobs or create the equalizer to just the right place to have a good, healthy human. No, rather than do it like that, I'm just existing in the most general way that I think the organism is kind of meant to exist. And yeah, I drive a car every now and then. I know that. I drive a car every day. I use an iPhone. I do lots of things that are unnatural, but I'm trying to not, you know, devolve the conversation into the ridiculous and silly here. I'm trying to say that it's an aspiration to try to, for me to try to be that authentic human in diet and in movement, in menu and in movement and in mindset. And those things combined together, smashed into this big human snowball is if you can live that and be that thing, I think there's more fulfillment than you can ever imagine. And that's what I'm feeling in my life right now. Now, one could argue that I feel so fucking good because I used to weigh so much. And it was hard to be happy when you're so fat and disgusting and overweight and mashed to the earth. So, of course, you feel good at 190 pounds and you run around and, you know, people are paying attention to you and asking you to talk to them and interviewing you or whatever the case is, you know. Of course you're happier. It has nothing to do with all of those other things. Well, I can't prove it to you. There's nothing I can whip out of my briefcase and go, here, look at that. See, told you. So it all essentially comes back to faith. And I think it depends on who's got faith and whose faith is strongest and the most logical thing.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, it's also, you know, a kind of a really interesting metaphysical question. Like, I know your story to some extent, and it was the 420-pound guy who started running.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't like, well, you got really thin and then you're happy, so then you took up running and eating plants. You know, it was the 310-pound guy who started eating plants.
That's right.
You know, it's you know, you started acting like a natural human and you became happier before you got the external results that everyone's so excited about.
Right. And it was like pixels slowly falling into place over time. It wasn't just a thing, you know. But I feel like I have identified some truths and I don't think that they're very outlandish in my assertion of them. And that's, you know, that humans eat mostly plants, if not all plants, and humans move around with their feet, legs, arms swinging about in a bipedal fashion. And if we exist doing both of those things in tandem with purpose, you could be hard pressed to find a sick human that if you can do that. And I think that, of course, there are things that exist in the margins and cancers that are going to happen no matter what, and weird birth defects that are going to happen no matter what. But I think in the balance, if we can act and exist that way, we can be extraordinarily happy and fulfilled with our very simple lives. I have a very simple life, and I am extremely happy human being, my friend. Right? Well, and that, I wasn't before.
Yeah, right? that's what I'm hearing right now. That never in all our conversations never really struck me as it just did. In that, if we are moving vigorously as in bipedal locomotion, walking, running, jogging, whatever, at whatever level we can do it in a sustained way, and we're eating plants, like that's kind of the recipe for human happiness, you know, give or take, you know, other things. But without those, like we have to create an entire civilization and culture and 500 TV channels and all these distractions to try to compensate for the fact that we're not doing those two really simple things.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Like that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yes, sir. To me, yes, sir.
I know I do good when you call me sir. Yeah. So as you know, we have hundreds of hours worth of things to talk about. But I kind of wanted to get to draw a boundary on this topic, just to get our thinking down and to give you a chance to answer Joe Rogan's question about what exactly do you mean by nature's protocol?
And I know that's not the answer he's looking for. I don't think he wants something more specific that's not the type of answer I have. That's it. That's my answer. That's what I think we should be doing. And I'm trying to live that way and poke holes in what it's manifesting in my life. Go ahead and do that. That's fine too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're doing is you're essentially giving the plant-based world the same argument that paleo likes to use, but paleo is sort of a fantasy.
Right. I think you're exactly right. Yeah.
Like, look at the guys who do CrossFit. Like they're right. Into like this, you know, benign masochism. Like they understand that life is richer when you're challenging yourself and you're putting yourself through pain. They they're like, you know, I want to eat like a natural human. I want to live like a natural human. And we're just arguing about, great, what does that really look like? When we're being a natural human and not just giving in to our indulgent desires and then justifying them later.
Right. Yeah. I think it's an innate desire to want to be that authentic human. I think that's what all, you know, disequilibrium comes from. All unhappiness comes from just not really being able to identify with and let out the essence of who you really are as a human being. And I don't think that is always being a big, strong, meaty, forceful guy. Sometimes it is in the margins. Those people naturally exist, you know. But I think in the balance, it's more about being a long, lean, fit mover, territory coverer, right? And so that's how I try to live, and I've found a whole lot of happiness in that tag.
Yeah. Well, you know, one way I think about it is that every successful organism contributes positively to its environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, humans are like the big exception. Like we're, you know, we're destroying everything left and right.
Right.
You know, but the, you know, the bird shits on the ground and contributes to the fertility of the soil. So the tree drops leaves and the worms can live and the bird can eat. Like, and so, you know, as an authentic human being, that's one of the things we all have to do as organisms is like, how do we contribute to our communities to make them better, richer places? We don't do it by requiring hundreds of thousands of dollars per year of medical care because we chose not to live a human lifestyle.
That's right. There should be a symbiosis, right? That's what you're saying with nature. Like all other things in nature have a symbiosis with the things around them in their environment. Like, and that's not what we do. We have cauterized ourselves from our environment with like disease and pleasure. And so when we do participate in a symbiosis, when we do participate in consuming from the territory that we live or like the territory that we live and cover ground on, do these two things that I think are really essential and normal and required by the healthy human, then there is a symbiosis that happens between those foods and the gut inside of your body cavity and how you assimilate nutrients, all of the nutrients to repair all of the tissues that it took you, that you had to spend to find these nutrients. You know what I'm saying? And so like, there's a big, beautiful, reciprocity that happens, I think, like a cycle that happens where you're just part of your surroundings. And I think that that's what we're trying to do when we do things like get back into nature and go hunting and spend weeks and days and weeks and sometimes months out doing these things that we have this natural drive to do. But I think sometimes they're misguided and enabled to be incorrect with the promise of pleasure and gluttony, you know?
Yeah, well, and then, you know, we can say, well, if it weren't true, we wouldn't be here.
That's exactly my point. That's what we've been doing up until we found that first rock and killed that first thing or whatever, or built that first fire to cook that first piece of flesh or organ meat or whatever. That's, you know, that, like I said, that's a popcorn fart in the wind amount of time. The bulk of our evolution as an organism has been doing exactly what you and I are talking about. And the proof that it works is the fact that we're still goddamn here and we're still dominant. We're still dominant. We have figured out how to weaken ourselves on an epidemic level through the unrestricted accessibility to pleasure, but we're still here, and these brilliant organisms that are kind of going off in the weeds and having like a little computer glitch right now over several generations, which is just, again, a popcorn fart in the wind when we talk about the whole of evolution in this organism, right? So we are experiencing, I think, some change that's happening, and I see it happening, and we're still long ways from it really being accepted. But just the fact that people are willing to have this discussion and talk about something that seems completely counterintuitive to them as a coon ass, a Louisianan, a person with a boat. I still have a boat and fishing poles and all that stuff. I just, you know, so it's just, I don't know, you know, it's a scary thing to accept and look at in its eye, but I think that it's totally doable and we can adjust, make a little course correction and be and forever change, like, I know it sounds so crazy, but like the world, we can change the world. It's a beautiful thing with something very, very simple, man. Very, very simple.
Well, it's probably the only way anyone's ever changed the world. Right. If complicated stuff worked, we'd be doing great by now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess you're right. Yeah.
All right. So I want to let you go, but for people, for the small percentage of folks who are not following you yet, how can people stay in touch with you and see what you're up to?
Oh, sure. Just go my website. I have a website, joshlajani.com. I started that after that first Rich Roll in a podcast interview. He was like, dude, you don't have a website? What are you doing? So I did that. And so you can connect with me across all social media, from that website. And if you don't mind a few F-bombs, you can read a few race reports in there as well, and learn a little bit more about me and some of the ups and downs of my relationship with running, which I think is part of the reason we do it. And you can find, like I said, you can find connections to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all from my website. So you can get a hold of me that way. And I'm pretty easy to find because I have a pretty unique last name.
Yeah. Why don't you spell it for folks?
Yeah, sure. It's LAJAUNIE, Josh Lajani at joshlajani.com is the website. And that's my Twitter handle, all one word, Josh Lajani. Instagram, same thing. And then I'm Josh Lajani on Facebook, and I have a page too. So hit me up, man, and be curious. Let's talk about it.
Awesome. Josh, thanks so much for taking the time and for all your advocacy and inspiration. And thank you from me personally for helping me get on this amazing track of adding running to the plants. I've never felt better.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I'm honored to have been a part of that experience. That's beautiful, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Peace, man. Bye-bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself Podcast, this Friday edition. And I hope you'll check out the show notes at plantyourself.com/174, which has links to everything we talked about, as well as Josh's interviews on Rich Roll and a couple of articles about crazy, ridiculous articles about how eating full fat cheese is really good for us. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 173 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And if you get the podcast but not the weekly email newsletter, you can sign up for that as well. Thanks to Plant Yourself Podcast patrons Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Elizabeth Clifton, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jen Vilkanovsky. Oh, I should have taken a breath before Jen. David Bizek, the mysterious Michelle X, Elsbeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Horlt, and Josina, without the last name, for your generous support of the podcast. If you would like to support the show, you can pay for my speech therapy. You can share this and other episodes on social media and via email. You can write a review on iTunes. And you can become a patron by pledging a one-time amount or an ongoing gift to the podcast over at plantyourself.com. Come on, everybody, support the show. In Garden News, had a fun day yesterday pulling out all the old tomato plants and preparing the beds for fall greens. Next to come out are the okra and the broom corn. I think we're going to actually make brooms out of the broom corn. So it's kind of fun to see. It's like when you're working on one of those iPad sketch programs and you realize you've kind of messed it up and you can just push a button and reset and erase everything. That's kind of how it feels in the garden. We've just done a reset, and so now we're ready to start painting again with nature's brilliant and abundant and delicious brushes and flavors. All right, that's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.